Well, another fantastic day in the National Football League. And, of course, we're going to talk about what the Lions did. You know that. Getting back on track. What a bounce back, especially defensively.
Makes sense. Yeah.
I love every second of it. He's Bill Keenest. I'm Sean Bellegian. Always like to let you know what's going on in the league right now. Bill, you and I were just talking about this. The poor Bears. They are getting... They are getting throttled. It's 41 to 3. And Bill, sometimes the score isn't indicative of how a game is going. And this is one of those games. It's worse than 41 to 3. This was just a bad, bad day for Chicago.
Yeah, it's just steamrolled. And wow. I mean, it looks, you almost feel sorry for him. Ha! Do you believe that? We're saying that about the Bears. But man, oh man, the Chiefs are just having their way with them. And it's kind of shocking because there was some expectation that the Bears were going to take a step this year. And they have backwards.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt about that.
They're taking a giant step. And, you know, when you get demoralized and defeated so soundly like that, it's not, you know, the score or the bumps and bruises. It's the psyche. It's the psyche. And I think that was the doubleheader game on Fox, I believe. I think they had the A crew there. And for the majority of the country to watch it. And the players know. They know who's watching their games and how much of the country is televising their games. That's going to be tough. But. As we were also talking about, we're watching the Cardinals beat the Cowboys.
Unbelievable. So, that's the league. NFL. How many times have we said it, Bill? This is the National Football League, man. Yeah. Exhibit A right there.
Right. Yeah. And then we marvel at Tua and the Dolphins. I mean, Johnny B, we were talking off air. You know, it's almost hard to – really explain how dynamite they are and explosive. And you mentioned the greatest show on turf back in 99. Maybe that's a comparable, but holy moly, to score 70 points on an NFL defense against a potential Hall of Fame coach, John. Holy crap. As Ray Romano would say, that was, and I think Tua started out 17-17. I mean, that kid is so impressive. And remember last year at this time, he was getting a lot of arrows slung at him. And there were a lot of people that thought, well, Herbert's the quarterback from that draft, and he still may well be a very good player, which he is. But Tua, no one's played as well as he has this year.
News is Bill Keenest. Google is your friend. The last time an NFL team scored 70 points, Washington in 1966. They beat the Giants 72-41.
Holy moly. Oh,
72-41.
I remember the championship game score 73-0, Washington and Chicago. But I obviously didn't recall that game.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
And think about it, you know, Sean, the great players, the great offenses, the way the league has evolved offensively, for a team to do that for the first time in what, 50 plus years is remarkable. And boy, their speed. And they had a rookie running back.
Yep.
That ran for over 200 yards, I think.
Incredible.
Holy mackerel.
Incredible.
Yeah, incredible. So they are making a statement early on, but it's still early, so we'll see. But, kudos.
Always like to let people know about the afternoon games in case you don't know what's going on. Seahawks on top of the Panthers about 7 minutes to go there, 29-20. The Bears just scored a touchdown to make it 41-10. I'm sure that there were multiple shots of Taylor Swift in the crowd. Thank goodness Taylor Swift was at the game because they didn't have much to talk about other than that, Bill. That's right. Dak Prescott just threw an interception, Cards ball with 3 minutes to go, and a 12-minute lead. I mean, here's a Dallas team, Bill, that I had outscored their opponents, what, 70-10, the New York teams in the first 2 weeks? And they're losing to the Cards, who came into this game struggling in every way, shape, and form.
Yeah, I mean, and we say it every week, that's the NFL. And the other thing about that game today, conservatively, probably half the stadium was Cowboy fans.
Oh, yeah.
Because,
oh, yeah.
You know, Dallas travels, but also, you know, they still have that America's Team reality to it. And training out at Thousand Oaks all those years in California, the Cowboys have a ton of fans in the desert and in Arizona. But Arizona, man, you know, give them credit. Arizona, Houston, you know, some of the teams that were searching for early season success, young teams and new coaches are doing pretty well.
Classic matchup tonight, 8:20, one that I'm sure you remember as a young man, Bill Keenis, the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Las Vegas Raiders. Still sounds weird. I'm not going to lie, but that's your 8:20 game. And then of course, the last doubleheader of the year on Monday, tomorrow, Eagles Bucks at 7:15 and Matthew Stafford's Rams taking on Joe Burrow and the Bengals, who they just love to start out slow. That's their MO. Like do they get on track tomorrow? You know, that's the big question. You know, I think a lot of people just assume that it's going to happen because it happened before. And to that, I say it's not that easy in the National Football League, Bill. It just isn't. When you get in a hole, it's tough to get out of a hole.
Yeah, it really is. There are very few great teams in the league. There are very few really bad teams in the league. And there are the remaining teams that can win any Sunday, beat anyone. With the Bengals, it's perplexing because I don't know if Burrow's going to go or not. He has the injury. And the one thing I'll say about that division that they're in, Baltimore could have won today to go 3-0, I think. So they didn't. But one of the best acquisitions, and we can call it a free agent acquisitions made in the NFL this offseason, was not for a player, but it was for a coach that the Browns acquired, Jim Schwartz. And Cleveland could easily be undefeated. Their defense has played so well. And I mean, they could have, should have, would have beat the Steelers, but Steelers defense scored 2 touchdowns last week.
Yeah.
And I think Myles Garrett had 3.5 sacks today. And so Schwartzy is up to his defensive magic. And if they can find a way, and it appears certainly today they did, to overcome the Nick Chubb injury, the Browns are a team to watch.
I agree. I think they're a playoff team. I'm not going to back off from that. We'll wait and see how it goes. Bill, we got to get into the Lions, obviously. Yep. A big bounce back win. Talk about defense. That defense was outstanding today. It really was. And, you know, for all the questions about getting to the quarterback, they made poor Desmond's life miserable today. They really did. Want to talk about the game you covered. Just a reminder for people. Yes, of course, you're associated with the Detroit Lions. You always will be. But my pal works for the NFL as well, and every week he's working a game, and he saw some interesting things in his game. Lots of college football to talk about. The Ohio Bobcats. Are we looking at Ohio and Toledo right now as being the class of the Mid-American Conference? Tough loss for Michigan State, no doubt. Michigan keeps rolling. A classic last night between Ohio State and Notre Dame. So much to do. Don't you go anywhere. It is gridiron wrap on a Sunday night. Many thanks to Danielle, our producer tonight on Gridiron Wrap, 760 WJR. All right, Bill, I'm going to say something, and I want all the listeners out there to hear the whole thing. I don't want you to jump on me right away and, oh, he's going negative or anything like that. Hear me out, okay? The Lions win today, okay? They improved to 2-1 on the season. And Bill, you tell me if I'm wrong. They haven't brought their A game yet. They knocked off the defending Super Bowl champion. They knocked off the unbeaten Atlanta Falcons today. And absolutely, it's a positive to me, Bill, that the Lions have done this, knocking off the Super Bowl champion, knocking off the unbeaten Kansas City Chiefs. That's a positive that they haven't brought.
Absolutely, Sean. And that's the measure of really good teams. When you don't play your absolute best and still win, because at the end of the day, that's what matters. It's not style points. It's not figure skating. It's winning. That's it. It's not how, it's if. And when the how isn't what it's capable of being, as has been the case with the Lions, that's a positive, because you can only get better. And I think everyone expects that to be the case with the Lions.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, it was one of those games, Bill. I know you were working your game, but I think I can speak for a lot of Lions fans. It's early fourth quarter, and the Falcons are within 10 points, and you're sitting there going, how are they even within 10 points? I mean, because it really was that much of a domination by the defense today, and then the Lions got that touchdown. Jared Goff ran one in to make it 23, and everybody was breathing easy at that point in time. But Bill, 2-1 right now. All the people that were worried about last week, take a deep breath. You got to be feeling a heck of a lot better. And I'll tell you what, Thursday night in Green Bay is going to be special. That is a cool, cool situation that we're looking at.
Yeah, there's a lot of people smiling at the broadcasting department at the NFL for scheduling that game. Two division rivals, two teams that are 2-1 tied for first early in the year. Lambeau at night. I mean, it's got all the makings of a really classic divisional matchup. And all Lions fans have to do is think back to last January when the team went up there and the Packers had everything to play for. And Dan Campbell's boys put a beating on them and knocked them out of the playoffs. Like you said, it's going to be great. I think it's probably a good thing that it's a Thursday night game, because if it was Sunday, I think Detroit would come apart in anticipation of that game.
Is there somebody, I think it's safe to say Amon Ross St. Brown is a fan favorite already, and I think his legend is going to continue to grow. He had a monster game today, 9 receptions, 102 yards. Bill, in your history with the team and your history around the game, is there somebody that he reminds you of? The guy, I love this guy. This is the type of guy you go to war with. I love that chip that sits on his shoulder. I think it's awesome. Is there somebody that he reminds you of? I'm sorry to put you on the spot like that, but.
No, he's a combination to me of Johnny Morton and Brett Perryman.
Okay.
Ultimate gamers, tough as nails. I mean, he played supposedly with a steel plate in his shoe, his spike, because of his injury, his turf toe injury last week. And you always knew that Brett in particular and Johnny were going to show up no matter what the odds, no matter if they were banged up or not. They were just tough as nails. And you really couldn't cover them. You had to double them. And I think that's the case. And just imagine, you don't want to look ahead. You just want to look to Lambeau. But, when the Lions get healthy at the receiver position and they get, a former number one draft pick from last year back, and if J-Mo can be what everyone expects him to be, if nothing else, just that speed that he's going to bring to the defense, coverage is going to be huge. So, and like we've said last year, the year before in the NFL, teams are either moving up the mountain or they're going down the mountain. And there's no one that's going to argue the Lions aren't going up the mountain right now.
7 sacks today. What an answer by this defense. So many people. You guys got to find a way to get more pressure on the quarterback. Yeah. They made poor Desmond Ridder's life miserable today, Bill.
Yeah, he has to be suffering from shell shock, on that ride, that plane ride back to Atlanta. Cause a big sack is like a holding penalty against the offense, but even better, because it just does something to the crowd. It does something to the defense. It even, I think, energizes the offense that's waiting to get on the field And when you do that seven times, that's not normal. That's big time. So anybody that was worried about the defensive pressure, and there were concerns after the first two games, legitimately, but whatever the coaches did to fix it, Aaron Glenn and staff, it sure showed up today.
Bill, what's your take on the quick turnaround? Because I mean, listen, the guys at Thanksgiving, they understand it at Thanksgiving. Listen, the guys that I've talked to, they don't like it very much. No. You know, the game is tough enough as it is, but it sure sounds to me like the Thursday night game isn't going anywhere anytime soon.
And you know why, Shawnee B? Ratings,
you got it.
Revenue.
You got it.
And you know what? It's become now that the fans expect it. I think you'd have an outcry.
Yep.
Because, you know, Monday night, we love Monday night, and the first few weeks of the season, you got two games to pick from, like tomorrow night. And Thursday night's become must-see TV as far as NFL fans go, and I don't think it's going anywhere. I think the league tries to balance the scale a little bit. I know over the years when I was involved in league meetings and what have you, there would be a, you know, an unwritten, if not, you know, absolute focus on the traveling team being at home the week before. I think it would be far more unfair if the Lions had played, you know, wherever, at Atlanta today, had to fly back and then fly to Green Bay. So I know the league tries to do that to make it a little more equitable. But, you know, in reality, we have that benefit and advantage every Thanksgiving, because we usually now are playing at home. I'm not sure what this year schedule is the week before Thanksgiving. But the league's tried to make it a little more equitable for the traveling team, for the visiting team, for sure.
You know, Bill, it's interesting. The NFL. It was a situation where Monday night was always go out and, you know, 10-cent wings or 15-cent wings or whatever the case may be. And that's how they grab people. They know that we're creatures of habit. I do that on Thursday night now. No joke. I mean, sure, Thursday night, we have our own little tradition. My brother comes over every Thursday night, regardless of who's playing. My brother, my son, and I sit down at 8:10 and we're ready to watch a game. The NFL, we say it all the time, but it bears repeating, the NFL wins. That's what they do. The NFL wins, and they know they got us like that.
No doubt. It's surprising the government hasn't sanctioned a national study on work productivity on Friday mornings during the football season. You know, one of those multi-million dollar investigations into things that, you know what, it really doesn't matter. But I'm sure there's an impact, because, you know, the games are keeping you up till midnight and or later. And but you're right, it's become part of the sports landscape, and we all love it. No one's complaining about it. I think, you know, there are things that I feel have to be a priority, and that's with respect to the players and their ability to be as healthy as they can going into that game and coming out of the game. Obviously, both teams get 10 days of rest before the next game. So, you know, whatever can be done in that regard, I think, is important. And that's why, you know, my understanding or my belief is that most teams that play on Thursday night are playing at home the week before.
No doubt about that. And you know what, Bill? Lions have the Bears at home before this Thanksgiving game. So you got that right. Yeah. Hey, listen, when we come back, don't go anywhere. Bill Keenis is going to tell us about the Dan Campbell effect. And he and I want to have a little conversation about kickers. They're not useless, darn it. Not anymore. No. We'll get into that. Don't go anywhere. It is Gridiron Wrap on a Sunday night. Glad you could join us, 760 WJR. Oh, so glad you could join us. Special shout out to Danielle Mason. I'm also going to do a welfare check on Jason Fissler, our resident Dallas cop.
Oh, boy.
At the Fisher Building. I saw him on Friday at the studios, and he said to me, I kid you not, he looked at me and he goes, I'm just waiting for them to let me down. He didn't have to wait long. And Jason, I'm sorry, but yeah, I think you're familiar with how the Cowboys have been the last few years. Hey, Bill, I know you have a, not only do you work for the NFL, but you have a special relationship with the gentleman, Mr. North, who does all the scheduling. And I know you wanted to share a scheduling story.
Well, this predates Michael North. This goes back to when Val Pinchbeck was in charge of the broadcasting department. But like I mentioned earlier, Sean, there were league meetings back in the 90s and into the early 2000s about the Thanksgiving Day schedule, who was going to play. And obviously Detroit and Dallas had the home games. And in 96, I think it was, Kansas City made a attempt to have the games rotated. And that was more anti-Dallas than Detroit because Kansas City's franchise started in Dallas. That's where Lamar Hunt had the Dallas team, the Dallas Texans. But there was conversation at league meetings. And like I said in an earlier segment, the understanding was that the two host teams for Thanksgiving, Dallas and Detroit, would either play at home the week before or they would have a short trip, while the two visiting teams would always be at home. Okay, yeah. That's fair. So there were a few years we played at Chicago, Minnesota, short trip, not too bad. And then I think it was 05, 06, I get the schedule, and our longest trip of the year is the weekend before Thanksgiving at Dallas. Now, wait a minute. That doesn't make sense, right? So Dallas got the benefit of playing at home the week before, the Sunday before the Thursday game, and we're taking our longest trip of the year. And then the following season, we're playing at Arizona the Thursday or the Sunday before. So I did a little investigate, and I did so with the help of our good friend, fellow Spartan, one of the top reporter columnists that's ever worked in the NFL, Rick Goslin of the Dallas Morning News.
Legend.
And we both got a big laugh out of this, and Rick actually wrote an article that I think had some impact on future scheduling. But we went back and looked and found out that of the previous 18 seasons, Dallas played at home the Sunday before 17 times. And the Lions were the exact opposite.
Wow.
So somewhere, somehow, the equity thing wasn't truly there, but it did get changed. And so I just, when we were talking about that, I thought of that. Oh, those Cowboys. Yeah. So hey, they had the benefit. And while we were all thinking that, that both teams did, but it was more Dallas than us back then.
Before we get to something you brought up before the show, the Dan Campbell effect, that's our tease. I know I've said this to you before, but for the benefit of our listeners, I'm going to repeat it again. When they came out with the third. I really did. I could not stand the idea. Bill, I grew up in an era. 12:30 was the Lions. 4:15 was the Dallas Cowboys. Do not mess around with that. Here we go again. The NFL nailed it. Because I'll tell you what. Thursday night, when you've got a belly full of turkey, sometimes now two dinners, okay? Or for those that still spend all day at Ford Field, you just finished your deal, your dinner, to plop down on the couch and watch a quality National Football League game, what a win for everybody. I never thought that I'd say that, but my goodness gracious, what a brilliant idea.
Brilliant. That was what I was just going to say, Shawnee B. Brilliant. And I'll tell you this, there was a thought process when it was just the Lions and the Cowboys that had the Thursday games. Oh, you know, we got to rotate this and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Well, the truth is teams weren't that anxious to play every Thanksgiving, even if it was at home. And the Lions and the Cowboys sort of, you know, took that onus back for the Lions in the 30s and the Cowboys in the 70s and established one of the few remaining great traditions in all of sports, let alone the NFL. So when there was talk at league meetings about it, the idea of a Thursday night game that would rotate, so every team would have an opportunity and it wouldn't be something that would be, you know, a huge burden on a team every year, a third team every year. It was just a great decision by the league broadcasting, you know, leadership. And like you said, I mean, I think that'd be a revolt if we went back to just the two games. I mean, it's become part of that Thanksgiving holiday, the three games without question.
You brought up a great point before the show, and I wanted you to share it on the air with our listeners. And I like what you called it, the Dan Campbell effect, because, Bill, right. I really, truly believe that you are onto something that Dan Campbell is a major reason, if not the greatest reason and only reason, that the way coaches work now has changed dramatically in the last couple of years.
I think it has, Sean. I definitely think it's different, and quite simply what I'm talking about. And I saw today, obviously I'm working the Texans Jaguars game, so that's the game I'm focused on in the early window. But at the end of that game, I have access to every game that's being played. So I was flipping back and forth, and I saw the end of the Vikings game, and I saw the end of the Ravens-Colts game, and I saw teams going for it on fourth down in situations – that 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, no one could have written into a movie script, let alone into a, you know, a game plan. And it's happening more and more. And I am convinced, I mean, the first year that Dan, you know, was the head coach of the Lions, I think the football world probably looked at it somewhat like a novelty. Well, you know, he doesn't have his team together yet. It's going to take a couple of years. He's got to try things, you know, just to be competitive, just to have a shot. But now it's real.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Chargers had the ball in Minnesota up by four, not by three, but by four. So the Vikings needed a touchdown to win. It was fourth, and I forget what the distance was. It was three or four. It wasn't just, you know, fourth and an inch from their own 20 with a couple minutes to go. And he went for it and he got stuffed. So the Vikings take over. They don't capitalize. John Harbaugh, one of the great coaches of our era, goes for it in overtime from around the 50 against the Colts. He gets stuffed. Colts end up winning the game. By the way, Matt Gay, the Colts kicker, another great, we talk about free agent acquisitions, set an NFL record with four field goals over 50 yards today. and it wasn't in the friendly confines of Ford Field or Lucas Oil Stadium. It was on the grass and the dirt in Baltimore outside. I mean, what a performance. But I think more and more, especially with the analytics out there, you know, giving coaches perhaps an excuse, you know, well, the analytics say, but I don't think Dan worries about analytics. I think it's the gut. That's the analytic. That's the app he refers to, his gut.
Yep.
And you see it more and more. And I don't know who keeps track of these things. Elias Sports Bureau was the preeminent statistical, you know, guru when it came to all professional sports. They may, you know, chronicle this from weekend to weekend, but, you know, we may have set a record for the games this weekend for going on it on fourth down in the most unusual, you know, situation, not your typical, you know, fourth and whatever. I just think it goes back to Dan Campbell. Coaches were watching that opening game against Kansas City. And I think objectively, you could make the point, if he didn't do that on that first series, Lions may not have won that game.
You're right.
You stole a possession from the Chiefs. You kept Mahomes off the field for another 5 or 6 minutes, and you scored a touchdown, and it was a 1-point game. So coaches are watching that and they're thinking, huh? If, you know, we get in that situation, why not? And I think Dan has had an impact on the game.
You are such a radio pro as well. You also made a great segue to our next segment about how kicking has improved. It is night and day, especially for guys like us who grew up in a different era. We'll tell you how when we come back. Also, a lot of college football to talk about, especially the red hot Bobcat. Bill Keenis wants to get his thoughts in on that. Don't go anywhere. One more segment. Gridiron Wrap, 760 WJR. Hey, listen, I grew up in an era where Eddie Murray or Roy Girella or Rafael Septien, I can keep going, but I'm going to stop right there. But you knew, look, if Mark Mosley walked up and nailed a 47-yard field goal, we all went, whoa, 47 is nothing today, Bill. It's amazing what kickers do on a week-by-week basis.
It really is, Shawnee B. And I'm gonna start by asking you a trivia question.
Okay.
Who was the NFL MVP in 1982?
Mark Mosley.
Oh, my man.
Formerly Redskins. Yeah,
that's right. That was my first full season with the Redskins. And Mark was on the team, had been on the team for a couple of years, and he was conventional, you know, the straight toe, and he was conventional. And that season started in Philadelphia, and the Eagles were just 2 years off the Super Bowl, and Jaworski and Dick Vermeil and Harold Carmichael, Wilbert Montgomery, they still had a great team. And we went to Philly. It was like 100 degrees on that old, you know, veteran stadium turf. And Mark Mosley kicked a 47-yarder on the last play of regulation and a 48-yarder in overtime. And we won that. And that sort of set the tone for the whole season. And I think he went on to kick 22 straight field goals.
Wow.
He kicked 5 in St. Louis at the old Busch Stadium on a cold December Sunday. And then we beat the Giants in December in the snow at RFK. He kicked the field on the last play of the game to win it like 15-14. So, kickers have a bigger impact on the game today than they ever have. And I think when you go back to our early years as NFL fans, there were still a lot of conventional kickers out there. And there were still some kickers that played another position. There were. And the rosters were smaller. Teams couldn't afford to carry a luxury as in a kicker. But that started changing in the 70s. You know, and with the advent of the soccer style, Pete Gogolak, you know, in the 60s with the Giants. That changed the game dramatically, and it just has evolved since then, where the rosters have gotten bigger. The teams understand the importance of it. I mean, most kicks are money plays, certainly place kicks are. So the rosters expand. You can afford to not only have a kicker, but a long snapper, a punter, and there can be a heck of a living made by those athletes that play those positions. And they're bigger, they're faster, they're stronger. And what we're seeing today, Sean, we wouldn't even have thought of, like you mentioned, with the Eddie Murray's and the Garo Yepremians and the Mark Mosleys of the world. I mean, if Roy Girella kicked a 50-yard field goal for the Steelers in the 70s, that'd have been a parade at the point with the fountain going, because it didn't happen.
Yeah.
But it's commonplace today, and it's not. It's in college too.
Yeah,
you see it in college, and sometimes in high school. So, has any position evolved like that? Probably not.
No, it is. It is absolute. I mean, these guys are expected to go up and hit them now. I mean, they are. They're 51. Oh, no big deal. I mean, that was gasp. Not that long ago in the National Football League. Yeah. Bill, we've got about 3.5 minutes to go, but. Again, your Ohio Bobcats are rolling. They start out the Mid-American Conference slate the right way. A big, big victory. They improved to 4-1. Boy, two really good teams in the MAC so far in Ohio and Toledo. But I know you got to be fired up about the Bobcats.
Oh, I was worried about that game. I know Scott Leffler, you know, former Wolverine. He actually coached with the Lions for a year, and I think he's done a real good job at BG. And BG played U of M pretty tough in that first quarter, at least the week before. And, you know, OU's coming off an emotional win over Iowa State, okay, Power 5 school, who, by the way, yesterday beat Mike Gundy. I'm 40, Oklahoma State. I was a teammate of Barry Sanders back in the 80s, Mike Gundy. I was his quarterback, Mike Gundy. Iowa State put 30 on them and beat Oklahoma State. So that just makes that Bobcat win over Iowa State that much better. But the thing I'm most impressed about is the defense. I mean, they dominated BG, and it was a great setting. I mean, the place was packed. It was homecoming at Bowling Green. Dwight Perry Stadium was packed. Beautiful day. And it was over midway through the first quarter. So, yeah, I'm a happy guy. I'm a happy guy.
You know, got a couple minutes remaining. Tough loss for the Spartans up in East Lansing. Yeah. Give credit to Maryland for taking care of business. Michigan took care of business against Rutgers. But, Bill, just another classic, another Saturday night classic between Notre Dame and Ohio State. I don't know if you stayed up and watched it. It was riveting down the stretch. Boy, they've been blessed this year with some magical Saturday night games in college football.
You are so right, Sean. And I'm telling you, talk about waking up the echoes. Watching that game just took me back again. We keep talking about our childhood, but the Lindsey Nelson Notre Dame, you know, highlight show on Sunday mornings, and Joe Theismann and all those great Tommy Clements and the great former players. But that's a special setting, certainly in South Bend, and kudos to Ohio State for that young quarterback to do what he did, when he did it, where he did it, how he did it. And you tell me that no matter, you know, how big the stage, how much money you're making, that there's not emotion watching Ryan Day after that game. That was emotion. I think it was pure. It was genuine. And that's why we love sports.
Amen
to
that.
We love sports.
I say it all the time. I want to echo what you said in our remaining 30 seconds. If you're a college football fan, go to Notre Dame. I don't care what your feelings about Notre Dame are. The game day experience, walking down to the grotto, the statues around the stadium, there's nothing like it, Bill. There really isn't. You might get a better atmosphere someplace else with crazy fans and all that. Yeah. But if you're talking ambiance, it's tough to beat Notre Dame, and I'll leave it.
Yeah, my oldest son, who's the coach at Holly, went there, and he said, "Dad, it's football heaven."
Yep.
And I think it is.
No doubt about it. Danielle Mason, thank you. Thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. Gridiron Wrap.